Page 84. Here I was perplexed, and I saw that Ethgal was angry with me in the extreme. So also were the others, staring at me with concern and anger. I promised to Hergr that I would not draw the name of Ethgal or of any of the others. At this, they were all relieved. After this, no more was my writing discussed. But Bullywiff gave certain instructions, and whenever it rained I was always directed to the largest tree, and I was given more food than before. Not always did we sleep in the forest, nor did we always ride through the forest. At the border of some forest, Bullywiff and his warriors would plunge forward, riding at a gallop through the dense trees, without a care or a thought of fear. And then again at other forests he would draw up and pause, and the warriors would dismount and burn a fire and make some offering of food, or a few sheets of hard bread, or a kerchief of cloth, before continuing farther. And then they would ride around the edge of the forest, never entering its depths. I inquired of Hergr why this should be. He said that some forests were safe and some were not, but did not explain further. I asked him, "What is not safe in the forests that are judged so?" Page 85. He made this reply, "There are things that no man can conquer, and no sword can kill, and no fire can burn, and such things are in the forests." I said, "How is this known to be?" At this he laughed and said, "You Arabs always wish to have reasons for everything. Your hearts are a great bursting bag of reasons." I said, "And you do not care for reasons?" "It avails you nothing. We say, a man should be moderately wise, but not overwise, lest he know his fate in advance. The man whose mind is most free of care does not know his fate in advance." Now I saw that I must be content with his answer, for it was true that upon one occasion or another I would make some manner of inquiry, and Hergr would reply, and if I did not comprehend his answer, I would ask further, and he would reply further. Yet again, when I made of him an inquiry, he would reply in short fashion, as if the inquiry were of no substance, and then I would have nothing further from him, save a shaking of his head. Now we continued on. Verily, I can say that some of the forests in the wild north country do provoke a feeling of fear, for which I cannot account. At night, sitting about the fire, the Northmen told stories of dragons and fierce beasts, and also of their ancestors who had slain these creatures. Page 86. These, they said, were the source of my fear, but they told the stories with no show of fear, and of such beasts I saw nothing with my own eyes. One night I heard a grumbling that I took to be thunder, but they said it was the growl of a dragon in the forest. I do not know what is the truth, and report now only what was said to me. The north country is cold and wet, and the sun is seldom seen, for the sky is gray with thick clouds all the day. The people of this region are pale as linen, and their hair is very fair. Also, after so many days of travel, I saw no dark people at all, and indeed I was marveled at by the inhabitants of that region on account of my skin and dark hair. Many times a farmer or his wife or daughter would come forth to touch me with a stroking motion. Hergr laughed and said they were trying to brush away the color, thinking it to be painted upon my flesh. They are ignorant people with no knowledge of the wideness of the world. Many times they feared me and would not approach me close. At one place, I do not know the name, a child cried out in terror and ran to cling to his mother when he saw me. At this, the warriors of Bullywiff laughed with great merriment. Page 87. But now I observed this thing. With the passing of the days, the warriors of Bullywiff ceased to laugh and fell into an ill humor more each day. Hergr said to me they were thinking of drink, of which we had been deprived for many days. At each farm or dwelling, Bullywiff and his warriors asked for drink, but in these poor places there was often no liquor, and they were sorely disappointed, until at last there was no trace of cheerfulness about them. At length we arrived at a village, and there the warriors found drink, and all of the Northmen became intoxicated in a moment, drinking in raucous fashion, heedless that the liquor poured over their chins and clothing in their haste. In truth, one of the company, the solemn warrior Ethgal, was so demented from liquor that he was drunk while still upon his horse, and fell attempting to dismount. Now the horse kicked him in the head, and I feared for his safety. But Ethgal laughed and kicked the horse back. We remained in this village the space of 2 days. I was much amazed, for previously the warriors had shown great haste and purpose in their journey, yet all was now abandoned to drink and stuporous slumber. Page 88. Then upon the third day, Bullywhip directed that we should continue, and the warriors proceeded, I among them, and they accounted the loss of 2 days nothing strange. How many days further we traveled, I am not certain. I know that 5 times we changed horses for fresh mounts, paying for these in the villages with gold and with the little green shells that the Northmen value more highly than any other objects in the world. And at length we came to a village of the name Lenborg, situated by the sea. The sea was gray, and likewise the sky, and the air was cold and bitter. Here we took another vessel. This ship was in appearance similar to the one previous, but larger. It was called by the Northmen Hasboken, which means sea-goat, for the reason that the ship bucks the waves as a goat bucks, and also for the reason that the vessel was swift, for among these people the goat is the animal that means swiftness to them. I was afraid to go upon this sea, for the water was rough and very cold. A man's hand plunged into that sea would lack all feeling in an instant, it was so dire cold. And yet the Northmen were cheerful, and joked, and drank for an evening in this sea village of Lenborg, and disported themselves with many of the women and slave girls. Page 89. This, I was told, is the Northmen's custom before a sea voyage, for no man knows if he shall survive the journey, and thus he departs with excessive revelry. In every place we were greeted with great hospitality, for that is considered a virtue by these people. The poorest farmer would set all he had before us, and this without fear that we would kill or rob him, but only out of goodness and grace. The Northmen, I learned, do not countenance robbers or killers of their own race, and treat such men harshly. These beliefs they hold despite the truth of the matter, which is that they are always drunk and brawling like unreasoning animals and killing each other in hot duels. Yet they do not see this as murder, and any man who murders will be himself killed. In the same way, they treat their slaves with much kindness, which was a wonder to me. Footnote 4. If a slave turns ill or dies in some mishap, it is not counted any great loss, and women who are slaves must be ready at any time for the ministrations of any man, in public or in private, day or night. Footnote 4 at the bottom of page 89. Other eyewitness accounts disagree with Ibn Fadlan's description of the treatment of slaves in adultery, and therefore some authorities question his reliability as a social observer. In fact, there was probably substantial local variation from tribe to tribe in the accepted treatment of slaves and unfaithful wives. Return to text. Page 90. There is no affection for the slaves, and yet there is no brutality for them either, and they are always fed and clothed by their masters. Further, I learned this, that any man may enjoy a slave, but that the wife of the lowest farmer is respected by the chiefs and earls of the Northmen as they respect the wives of each other. To force attention on a free-born woman who is not a slave is a crime. And I was told that a man would be hanged for it, although I never saw this. Chastity among women is said to be a great virtue, but seldom did I see it practiced, for adultery is not accounted as any great matter. And if the wife of any man, low or high, is lusty, the outcome is not thought remarkable. These people are very free in such matters, and the men of the North say that women are devious and cannot be trusted. To this they appear resigned, and speak of it with their usual cheerful demeanor. I inquired of Herger if he was married, and he said that he had a wife. I inquired with all discretion if she were chaste, and he laughed in my face and said to me, "I sail upon the seas, and I may never return, or I may be absent many years. My wife is not dead." From this I took the meaning that she was unfaithful to him, and he did not care. Page 91. The Northmen do not consider any offspring a bastard if the mother be a wife. The children of slaves are slaves sometimes, and free sometimes. How this is decided, I do not know. In some regions, slaves are marked by a crop of the ear. In other regions, slaves wear a neckband of iron to signify their place. In other regions, slaves have no markings, for that is the local custom. Pederasty is not known among the Northmen, although they say that other peoples practice it. They themselves claim no interest in the matter, and since it does not occur among them, they have no punishment for it. All this and more I learned from my talking with Herger, and from witnessing the travels of our party. Further, I saw that in each place where we rested, the people inquired of Bullywhiff what quest he had undertaken, and when they were informed of its nature, that which I did not yet comprehend, he and his warriors, and I among them, were accorded the highest respect, receiving their prayers and sacrifices and tokens of good wishes. At sea, as I have said, the Northmen become happy and jubilant, although the ocean was rough and forbidding to my way of thinking, and also to my stomach, which felt most delicate and unsettled. Page 92. Indeed, I purged myself, and then asked Herger why his companions were so happy. Herger said, "It is because we shall soon be at the home of Bullywhiff, the place known as Yatlam, where live his father and his mother and all his relatives, and he has not seen them for many long years." To this I said, "Are we not going to Wolfgar's land?" Herger replied, "Yes, but it is fitting that Bullywhiff must pay homage to his father and also to his mother." I saw by their faces that all the other earls, nobles, and warriors were happy as Bullywhiff himself. I asked Herger why this was so. "Bullywhiff is our chief, and we are happy for him, and for the power that he will soon have." I inquired what was this power of which he spoke. "The power of Runding," Herger answered me. "What power is that?" I inquired, to which he made this reply, "The power of the ancients, the power of the giants." The Northmen believe that in ages past the world was populated by a race of giant men who have since vanished. The Northmen do not count themselves the descendants of these giants, but they have received some of the powers of these ancient giants in such ways as I do not understand well. Page 93. These heathens also believe in many gods, who are also themselves giants, and who also have power. But the giants of which Herger spoke were giant men and not gods, or so it seemed to me. That night we breached upon a rocky shore, made of stones the size of a man's fist, and there Bullywhiff encamped with his men, and long into the night they drank and sang around the fire. Herger joined in the celebration and had no patience to explain to me the meanings of the songs, and so I do not know what they sang. But they were happy. On the morrow they would come to the home of Bullywhiff, the land called Yatlam. We left before the first light of dawn, and it was so cold my bones ached, and my body was sore from the rocky beach, and we set out upon the raging sea and the blasting wind. For all the morning we sailed, and during this period the excitement of the men increased further until they became like children or women. It was a wonder to me to see these huge, strong warriors giggle and laugh like the caliph's harem, and yet they saw nothing unmanly in this. There was a point of land, a high, rocky outcrop of gray stone above the gray sea, and beyond this point, Herger told me, would be the town of Jatland.